I started listening to Christmas music this week. Some of you have been listening since September, but me, like 25 days, I love it, but that's enough of it. And of course, all sorts of famous Christmas songs that are out there. One of the most famous, one that we still listen to, first came out at the height of World War II, 1943. Bing Crosby released the song, "I'll Be Home for Christmas." And of course, it's all about this longing to be home for Christmas, right? Please have snow and mistletoe and presents under the tree and the family gathered around. And I mean, it's this beautiful sort of image of Christmas time and everyone being together. But it ends this way. It says, "I'll be home for Christmas if only in my dreams." Because of course, at the height of World War II, it was written for millions of servicemen who were at war in Europe. And for them, home for Christmas was only a dream. They were actually going to spend Christmas far off in a foreign land fighting a war. Now, that song is still popular today, in part because of the nostalgia of it, right? We also have this kind of longing to be home at Christmas where everything's kind of perfect, right? There's snow just at the right time. There's enough romance. There's a little mistletoe. There's gifts. Everyone gathers around, and it's just this sort of beautiful time together. Except that, of course, often it isn't that way, right? Often our dreams for Christmas aren't exactly or different than the reality of the case. In fact, often our dreams, not just for Christmas, but for life, don't turn out the way that we thought they would, do they? I wonder if you remember the first time that it ever sort of dawned on you that you became aware that, in fact, your dream for life wasn't working out exactly the way that you had thought it might. Right? I mean, we all have these dreams when we start out, you know, what school we'll go to, who we would marry, what our kids would be like, where we would work. And, you know, those are good dreams. The perfect house, the perfect job, the perfect spouse, the perfect 2.3 kids. And the dream just sort of seemed obvious, right? In fact, so obvious that obviously God would also be in favor of that kind of a dream. Except that eventually, for all of us, there comes a point where you realize that the dream isn't working out the way you had thought. That the expectations, the wishes, the goals that you had sometimes aren't going the way that you wanted them to go, the way you thought they should go. Your plans fizzle, your expectations come to nothing, and sometimes your dreams shatter, or sometimes just fade away. You know, you thought you'd be married by now, but you're not. Or you never imagined that you'd be married but also divorced at this time. Or nowhere in your dream did you consider that you would have cancer at this stage of your life. Or you thought that Christmas would be this time when the family would gather around, it would be tight-knit, and maybe children and maybe grandchildren. And instead, your family isn't that way at all. Or you dreamed that your marriage would be thriving, but probably the best word to describe it was mediocre. Or you dreamed that you would be in the middle of this brilliant career accomplishing all kinds of things, and instead, it's kind of like a dead end. And the dream that you had is not really where you find yourself living. And that happens, by the way, to everyone. No one gets just to have all of their dreams fulfilled in life. Sometimes that realization that your dreams aren't going to be fulfilled comes suddenly and unexpectedly, like a medical diagnosis. And sometimes they just sort of creep slowly into your consciousness. And it dawns on you that this, whatever this is, was not exactly how you had thought it was all going to work out. And when that happens, when your dreams are shattered or when they fade away, the question that we have as Christians and surprisingly often people who aren't Christians is this: where's God in all of this? Where's God when my world didn't work out the way I wanted? Where's the God in the midst of my disappointments and the regrets that I have in the middle of my life? And it's a fair question. Because the dreams that we have are good dreams, right? It's not like, hey, my dream was world domination and it didn't work out. Or you know, my dream was wild hedonistic living and it's not happening. Or my dream was, you know, hate and revenge. That's not the dreams we have. We have good dreams, like the kind of dreams that God should and you would think would want to fulfill in our lives. So the question is then, where is God when our life doesn't work out the way we want, when we have these disappointments and regrets in our life? Well, the story we're looking at today from the life of Jacob helps us answer that question. Jacob, if you're not familiar, was the grandson of Abraham, the son of a man named Isaac, a very famous family to whom God had made this incredible promise that through him he would build this amazing nation that would bless the world. But Jacob is a man who knows all about shattered dreams. You know, when we come to this story, his family is already a mess. I mean, he's born with a twin brother who was born a few minutes before him. And him and his twin, they're total opposites. His twin is named Esau. Esau is like a man's man. He's strong and competent and capable and tough. And Jacob is like the exact opposite. And these two have been at one another since birth. In fact, even before birth in their mother's womb. And his mother, I mean, she's kind of a manipulative, conniving kind of person a little bit. His father shows huge favoritism to his older son and kind of ignores him. And Jacob himself is no saint. I mean, one day his brother comes home famished. Jacob's got a pot of stew, but he won't give him any unless his brother sells him his birthright as the oldest son for a pot of stew. And his brother says, okay, whatever, give me the stew. And later, Jacob joins with his mother to deceive his father, who is getting blind, into thinking that he is his older brother, so that he gets this huge blessing, this family blessing. And when he does that, it makes his brother so angry that his brother sets out to kill him. So, his family is a mess. Nobody dreams like, boy, that's the kind of family that I wish that I could grow up in. And on top of that, I mean, at this point in his life, he has no wife, no kids, no money, no plans, and a brother who wants to kill him. I mean, this is a man who knows about dreams that haven't worked out the way that he wants. And the question for him is this: where is the God of my grandfather Abraham? Where is the God of my father Isaac, this God who's, you know, going to work in such amazing ways through our family? Where is he? And this is where Jacob is when we come to the story that we're looking at today. His life is a mess, his dreams are shattered, and so he does what we often all do when we come to that kind of place in our life. He runs. He sets out and heads off to another place. And that's where this story starts. In Genesis 28, it says this: Jacob left Beersheba, the place where his family was, and set out for Haran, a land far away where his uncle was. And so he runs away from his family, especially his brother who wants to harm him. He's trying to find a wife, and he runs as far away from the situation as he can, which is what we do when our dreams and our hopes shatter, right? I mean, we sometimes we run physically. Sometimes we get up and just get out of Dodge. We move to another city. We get a new job. We start all over. But often it's not so easy to do, is it? And so we run in different ways. We run away from the pain and the hurt in our life with those disappointments by doing too much of something. Anything that will distract us from that pain and hurt. Too much drinking, too much working, too much eating, too much video games, too much of busyness, just too much of anything as long as it distracts us from the pain and the hurt that we have around that. And also, often, we run from God. Now, it doesn't mean we stop coming to church. In fact, we might still be in our community group, might still say the right things, might still pray before meals. But other than that, we're kind of leaving God behind. We're not praying so much anymore. We're not really talking to God so much anymore. Because we feel that God could have, should have done something about this. I mean, where is God in this place? And this is what Jacob does. He runs and he runs and he runs until he finds himself in the middle of nowhere, in a certain place. Here's how the story goes. It says this: when he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. Now, when it says that he reached a certain place, that's a Hebrew expression that means nowhere. That's Hebrew for 100 mile house, right? or maybe the place past that, a place called Lac Lahaish. You know where Lac Lahaish is? Oh, someone does. That's impressive. Most people not, right? And nowhere. That's where he finds himself. He's alone. He's adrift. He's in the middle of nowhere. It's dark. And so he uses a rock as a bit of protection for him. And he lies down on the hard, cold, dusty ground to go to sleep. And he has a dream. Only this dream isn't his dream about his future and all the good things that are going to happen and where it's all going. This dream is a dream from God. And here's what happens. He says this. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And there above it stood the Lord God. So he has this dream. He has this dream, and he sees this stairwell in the middle of nowhere leading up into heaven. And heaven opens up, and these angels come down, and other angels go up. And it says there above it he saw the Lord. There in heaven, ruling over heaven and earth, he saw the God of all creation. But that expression, there above it, that's a Hebrew expression that has a double meaning. It also means there right beside him. In other words, what happens in this dream is that this stairwell appears and God is at the very top. And then God himself, the God who holds the galaxies in place, who oversees the teeming oceans and all the people in all of history and all the nations, that God, the God, descends those stairs and comes and stands with Jacob in the middle of nowhere. Comes and meets with a man who is running away. He comes to meet with a man who is not actually seeking him at that point. He comes to meet with a man whose life is a mess, partly of his own doing, partly of the doing of others. And he comes to meet him. God initiates it. God pursues this man. God comes to him in the cold, dark, dusty, certain place in the middle of nowhere. Which is a profound answer. It is the profound answer to this question. Where is God in the midst of shattered dreams? And the answer is, he's right there with you. He's right there with Jacob. God enters into his world. And this is what Christmas is all about, right? The story of Christmas is about God coming to us. It's about him pursuing us in the midst of the darkness, in the midst of the brokenness in our world, in the midst of the disappointment and the regrets and the very real world in which we find ourselves living. And he also came to us in a certain place. I mean, if Nazareth, where he grew up, was 100 Mile House, Bethlehem was Lac Lahaish. I mean, the place was nowhere. And when the baby was born, they didn't put a stone on the ground and rest the baby on the cold, dusty dirt, but it wasn't far off. They put him in a feeding trough in a cold, dusty barn. And the name that they gave to him was Jesus, because that's what the angel instructed them to name him, because he would save his people from their sins. But there was another title that was given to him, a title that was prophesied hundreds of years before by the prophet Isaiah. And Matthew tells us about that prophecy. He says this: the virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. God with us. Right there in the midst of the darkness and the difficulty. That's what Christmas is about. That's his promise to you and to us. Where is God in the midst of your shattered dreams and your disappointments and your regrets? Here's where he is. God is with you. Right there in the middle of it. Right there in the dead-end job, right there in the hospital bed, right there in the loneliness when Christmas time comes, right there in the heartache from broken or strained relationships, even if you've been running, even if you haven't been praying or paying any attention to God, he's right there with you. And he wants to give you a new dream, a different kind of dream, his dream. And that's what he does for Jacob. Here's what he says. He says to Jacob, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. God begins, when he gives him this dream, he begins by reminding him of a covenant promise that he swore to his grandfather Abraham, and by extension to his father Isaac, and by extension to him, that through him, through them, he would create this nation that would cover the earth. He says it's like the dust that you're sleeping in. That's how many people will come from you. See, God begins by saying, I have a covenant with you that is unbreakable. I swore that I would do this, and I swear to you that I will do it. The dream is founded or is staked on a covenant. And the same for you and I. You and I, we also have a covenant relationship with God. Not the same one that Jacob and Abraham and Isaac had. Our covenant with God is through his son, the baby that was born who became Jesus, who suffered and died and rose again. And because of that, we have this covenant relationship. In fact, on the night before Jesus died, he said to his disciples, he said, I have a new covenant with you now. God has a new covenant with you through my shed blood on the cross. It's a covenant of forgiveness, it's a covenant of love, and it's a covenant of new life. And he says, I will work in your life through that covenant. In fact, it's why it's so important that we regularly participate in communion. Communion, and again, if you're not familiar with it, it's what we're going to do at the end of the service. We're going to have a piece of bread and drink a cup of juice. Communion is an act where we remember that we are in a covenant relationship with God, an unbreakable bond between us and him because of Jesus. And it's why it's so important that you regularly take a communion, why you regularly participate in it, because you remember that we are bound to him through his death and his resurrection, which also means that just as he had good plans and purposes for Jacob, God has good plans and purposes for you. You know, in some of the darkest periods of my life, when I felt like things were falling apart, or my life was not turning out the way that I thought it should, it was actually communion that was so key in holding me close to God. In those days, I wasn't praying much. I was running, at least not physically, but in my heart and in my mind. I had all kinds of questions about God, questions for God. But the one thing that I was sure of was this, that I had a covenant relationship with God. That no matter what happened, he and I were bound together through Jesus. And so as hard as it was through that period, I just kept taking communion. I just kept remembering, I have a covenant relationship with God. And therefore, he is right there with me. Listen, if your world is crashing, if your world, you know, if you're running away, if you're feeling stuck and alone, if you have questions for God or about God, you should take communion. You should say, I don't know right now. I don't think this is the way it was meant to be. I wish to God you were doing something different, but I am in a covenant relationship with you, and I know it, and I trust it, and I know that therefore you are with me. This is the thing. Whatever you're going through right now, God is with you. That's what he says to Jacob. Here's the next thing he says. He says, I am with you. And will watch over you wherever you go. And I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. It's a pretty powerful promise, isn't it? I will not leave you until I have done what I promised you. Now notice what God doesn't say. He doesn't say, look, I will not leave you until I have fulfilled your dreams for your life. He does not say, you know, here in heaven we aim to please. All customers will be satisfied before we're done. It's not what he's saying, right? He says, I will watch over you. I will care for you. I will not leave you no matter what comes in your life until I have accomplished in your life what I have planned and set out for you. I have good plans and good purposes. That's a promise that God makes to us too, through Jesus. The Apostle Paul writes this, "He who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus." In Romans 8:28, he writes this, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him and who have been called according to his purposes." And the Apostle Peter writes this, "And the God of all grace, who called you to his eternal glory in Christ, after you've suffered a little while, will himself restore you and make you strong, firm, and steadfast." See, God makes these same kind of powerful promises to you and to me. He will not leave us until he has accomplished what he has set out to do. It's a promise that God made to Jacob. But of course, if you read ahead in Jacob's story, if you read what happens next, you find out that he had 20 hard years ahead of him. I mean, 20 years where he went to see his uncle Laban, who should have taken care of him but took advantage of him. Where he fell in love with this girl and wanted to marry her and just couldn't wait. But it turns out that the night of the wedding, they tricked him and he married her sister, whom he didn't like. And then a week later, he agreed to marry the girl that he did like, which means that he ended up with two wives in 1 week. That's pretty tricky, right? And then there was conflict between those two sisters, and there was infertility problems, and it was a hard, hard time for him in those years. See, God never promised Jacob that it would be easy. God never promises anyone that it will be easy. The promise that he made to him is that he would do something beautiful through Jacob's life, that he would not leave him until he'd accomplished what he promised to do. And that's a fact what he did. I mean, 20 years after running away from Beersheba, Jacob returns back to the land that God had prepared for him. And now he comes back with a big, beautiful family. Now he comes back with all kinds of wealth and resources. Now he comes back with a very real, not perfect, but real relationship with God. But now as he comes back to the land, he's going to have to face that brother who is set on killing him. And there's this tension. What will happen? And if you read it, this tension grows and grows until they see each other. And when they see each other, they run and embrace one another and they weep. I mean, the story of Jacob is no fairy tale story. But it is a good story of a good God who took a man who had shattered dreams and nothing in his life, and over time and through the work of God, produced a beautiful thing in his life, fulfilled the promises that he had for him. God was with Jacob, not to fulfill Jacob's dreams the way that he wanted, but to fulfill God's plans and purposes, which were better and more beautiful than what Jacob had imagined. The same is true for us. He wants to fulfill his plans for your life. Not in the way you necessarily expect, not necessarily according to your plans, but according to his. Much bigger, much better plans. You see, God is with you. But in the middle of that stuff, when you're in that certain place, I mean, it can be hard to see. And that's Jacob's experience. This is what he says next. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it." He was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven." You know, a couple of years ago, our family went on a holiday to Hawaii. And one afternoon, we drove across the island to go look at this waterfall. And so we got there. Parking was a problem. Then we had to pay for parking. So it wasn't great to begin with. Then there's this loop to go and see this waterfall. And so we started going down this path, down this beautiful, into this beautiful valley. But what we didn't realize is we went the wrong direction on that path. And so we went all the way down this path to the very bottom where it curved. And there was this waterfall, all 4 feet, 6 inches of it. I'm like, are you kidding? I mean, pretty, but hardly worth a trip across the island. So then we carried on, and I started to grumble, like, this is ridiculous. This is so dumb. And my wife started walking ahead of me, because I think she didn't want to have to listen to that for the next 10 minutes. And so she's up ahead, and I'm walking along, and like, tourist trap, blah, blah, blah. And she stops, and I walk by, and she says, "Hey, John, didn't you see it?" And I said, oh, yeah, I saw it. It sucks. And she said, no. And then she didn't use these words, but she should have. She's like, hey, dummy, turn around. And when I turned around, it turns out that if you come the right way down there, you look up. This is majestic. I mean, 60, 80-foot waterfall coming through the canopy of the forest, plummeting into this beautiful pool. I mean, it was breathtaking. But I almost missed it because I was looking in the wrong direction. It's quite possible to miss God in the dark, dusty, cold, certain place in your life because you're not looking for him there. It never dawned on you that this place that you find yourself in, of all places, is where you might have the most profound and beautiful encounter with God in your entire life. Jacob says, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. I almost missed it. And then it says he's afraid. Now why? Well, he was running away because he was afraid of his brother. But now suddenly when God comes in the picture, he's like, oh, there's something way bigger going on than just that. God's at work in my life, so I am paying attention now. And then he says this. He says, this place is the house of God. He says, this place right here is where heaven and earth meet. Which is fascinating and also deeply hopeful. This certain place, the middle of nowhere, the place where you find yourself running becomes the most holy place, the place where you meet God himself. You know, if you walk with people who are walking with God for a long time, if they're the kind of people you look up and say, man, they seem to have life kind of going, they got a relationship with God. If you get talking to them long enough, you will find often, not always, but often, that the biggest growth in their life, some of the most transformative experiences in their life, the ones that shaped them to become the kind of people that they are and lead them there, happened when they met God in that certain place. Happened when they weren't necessarily looking for God, even wrestling with God, and God pursued them and said, I have a dream for your life that is bigger and more beautiful than the one that you've been hanging on to. So you trust me. And you allow me to do in your life what only I can do. Jacob has this experience. And then he ends this whole thing with a vow. Here's what he says. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey that I am taking and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I return safely to my father's household, then the Lord will be my God, and this stone that I have set up as a pillar will be God's house, and of all that you have given me, I will give you a tenth. You know, I once met very early in the morning with a man whose wife had discovered the night before that he'd been having an affair, and she said, "We need to come and see you." And so I met with them, and I mean, she was devastated, shattered. And he was so sorry and so repentant. And he confessed what he had done. And we prayed. And we talked a little bit about what was going to happen next. But he'd done what he'd done. And there was implications and consequences for all of that. And so I said to him, look, there's a storm going to hit your life like it has never come in your life before. I mean, it is going to batter you. It's going to batter your marriage in all kinds of ways that you never imagined. The kind of pressures, the conflicting emotions, the kind of hard words that are going to happen yet between you and your wife, the challenges that come. Listen, my friend, you are going to want to run. And you need to make a commitment right here and right now that you will not. That no matter how hard it gets, how intense, what the pressures are, what are said, you make a commitment right now that you will follow Jesus no matter what comes. I said, it's like in the olden days when ships used to sail across the ocean, sailing ships, when they were too far from the shore to shelter in the face of a huge storm, then the crew would go down below, but the captain would have himself tied to the mast, lashed to the mast of the ship, so that he could continue to pilot his ship through this massive storm without being washed over the side by these massive waves that are coming. I said, listen, you need to lash yourself to the mast of Jesus Christ. No matter how it comes now, you commit to follow him. It's what Jacob does now. Jacob meets God in this certain place. God says, I have plans and purposes for you. He says, and Jacob says, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make a vow to you, God. I'm going to lash myself to the mast. God, if you're going to be if you're going to be with me like you promised you would be, then I'm going to follow you. I'm going to trust you. I'm going to stick to you no matter what happens until I come to the place that you prepared for me. And in one sense, the vow that he makes on that day, you know what? It changes nothing. I mean, if you read on, like I said, it's going to go hard for him for years to come. But on the other hand, that vow changed everything because it reoriented how he was going to experience the next 20 years of his life. Until that point, he was on a desperate flight to escape the wrath of his brother who wanted to kill him. Till that point, he was on a wild trek to try to find a wife so he could get his life together and get it going and figure out what was going on. But now it changes. Now it's a journey. Now it's a pilgrimage with a deeper purpose, with a sense that God is somehow at work in the midst of it all, however it is that God is ultimately going to do that. That changes Jacob from being a taker to a giver. Up to this point, everything was about him being a taker. In fact, that's what his name means. His name means, in Hebrew, it means heel grabber, deceiver, the one who's always grabbing so he can get and accomplish what he thinks that he's going to do. And now when he encounters God, he says, no, now I'm going to follow you, God, and I'm going to begin to give. I'm going to give back in light of what you're going to do and what you are doing in my life. It's amazing what God can do and what he will do when he meets you in the midst of your broken dreams. I mean, this is the story of Jacob, right? Here's a man who runs away but is pursued by God. A man who is trying to find a wife, but first God finds him. It's the story of a man who finds himself in the middle of nowhere. And yet in that very place, heaven and earth come to him. It's the story of a man who is a taker who becomes a giver. And above all, it's a story of a God who takes a broken and shattered dream and gives Jacob a different dream, a bigger, a more beautiful, a more powerful dream because God is with him. Yeah, every Christmas we light the Advent candles, sing Joy to the World once in a while. And each of those candles represents something different. One represents peace, one joy, one love, and one of the candles represents hope. And you know, when we talk about hope as followers of Jesus, it's not like wishful thinking. Rather, when we talk about hope, we're talking about the kind of experience that Jacob has had here. A deep sense of confidence that even though we don't know what the future holds, we know that God is at work in our lives and that he will be working in our lives according to his plans and purposes. That's the hope that we have. And the reason we have that is because of Jesus, because of Emmanuel, God with us. So this Christmas, I mean, I wish just a beautiful Christmas in your world for all of us. But I also know, because for all of us, no one gets all their dreams. We all have regrets and disappointments. Look around and say, it's not exactly the way that I thought that it would all work out. But I hope in the midst of that I trust in the midst of that you have a deep sense of hope, a confidence, because God is with you, because you are in a covenant relationship with God, that no matter what happens, he is with you. But more than that, that he has plans and purposes, that he's going to work in your life as you trust him and follow him. It's his dream for you. And if you've never asked God into your life, I think that you should do that today. You should invite God into your world and say, God, I need you. I can't work these things out on my own. My dreams haven't worked out the way I want. It's not going where I want. There's so much pressure without God in your life to make it all happen on your own. And so I want to invite you this day to invite God into your life through Jesus Christ, who made a way on the cross so that you could be in a right relationship with him. And to do that, I want to invite you to share communion with us. In fact, as we want to do right now, I want to invite the communion service to come forward. We're going to share communion together. And if you're not a follower of Jesus, you need to know this. Communion is something that is done by those who follow Jesus together. It's a way of remembering that we have this covenant relationship with him, that he is in our hearts, in our lives, that we are committed to him. And so if you are here today, you say, you know, I don't have that kind of relationship with God, but I want God in my life, then I want to invite you today to join us in following God. And the way you do that is by sharing communion today. You say, God, I want to enter that covenant relationship with you. Okay? So we're going to do communion differently than we have done in the past, as you can see. Today we're going to pass bread up and down the rows, real bread. Imagine that. If you're gluten-free, there's a little piece in the middle there. And we're going to sing a worship song while we do that. And then we're going to share the bread together after the worship song. So just hold the bread, worship together, and then we'll go here. So I'm going to ask you to stand while we sing, while the bread is passed. And then we're done, we'll share the bread together. Well, God, what incredible hope we have. What incredible goodness that you, God, have plans and purposes for our life. They're not always the way that we think, but your plans are higher and better and more beautiful and more powerful. And so, Father, when we find ourselves with disappointment and loss and regret, when it hasn't gone the way we think, God, may we rest deeply in the knowledge that you are at work through the covenant relationship we have with your Son, Jesus, and that you will lead us to the place that you have for us. And that one day we'll look back and say, oh yeah, God is so good. He is good, good, good. And so, Lord, this day we bless you. We commit again in our ways to walk after you. And we thank you for what you're doing in our lives. This day, this season, and all that you're doing, we bless you and we praise you in Jesus' name.